translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai. It is true that by practicing restraint of the senses by the yoga system, one can get relief from the disturbances of desire and lust. But this is not sufficient to give satisfaction to the soul. For this satisfaction is derived from devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Purport. It's a fairly long purport. Yoga aims at controlling the senses. By practice of the mystic process of bodily exercise in sitting, thinking, feeling, willing, concentrating, meditating, and at last being merged into transcendence, one can control the senses. The senses are considered like venomous serpents, and the yoga system is just to control them. On the other hand, Narad Muni recommends another method for controlling the senses in the transcendental loving service of Mukunda, the personality of Godhead. By his experience, he says that devotional service to the Lord is more effective and practical than the system of artificially controlling the senses. In the service of Lord Mukunda, the senses are transcendentally engaged. Thus, there is no chance of their being engaged in sense satisfaction. The senses want some engagement. To check them artificially is no check at all, because as soon as there is some opportunity for enjoyment, the serpent-like senses will certainly take advantage of it. There are many such instances in history, just like Vishvamitra's Muni falling a victim to the beauty of Menaka. But Haridas Thakur was allured at midnight by the well-dressed Maya, and still she could not induce that great devotee into her trap. The whole idea is that without devotional service of the Lord, neither the yoga system nor dry philosophical speculation can ever become successful. Pure devotional service of the Lord, without being tinged with fruitive work, mystic yoga or speculative philosophy, is the foremost procedure to attain self-realization. Such pure devotional service is transcendental in nature, and the systems of yoga and jnana are subordinate to such a process. When the transcendental devotional service is mixed with a subordinate process, it is no longer transcendental, but is called mixed devotional service. Srila Vyasadeva, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam, will gradually develop all these different systems of transcendental realization in the text. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Agyana Timiranda Sriyana Chanashana Kya Chushma. So a packed purport there by Srila Prabhupada, covering a whole range of topics. Obviously the key principle that is coming out here is that the yoga process, which is a process that has been going on since eternity, if we like. In fact, yoga is established by the Lord as a means for us to connect with Him. There are obviously many, many different ways of practicing this yoga. And so sometimes we think that the yogic asanas, the modern system of yoga, which is in the wide world generally restricted to gymnastics of some description, we think that is just a Kali Yuga concoction. But no, actually it has always been there right since the beginning. Individuals have engaged in extensive practice of yoga, and some have, despite understanding or maybe not understanding the purpose of the process, they have practiced it simply on a very superficial level. So just to advise us against this type of practice, and thereby for us to become confused that this is actually this will deliver spiritual results, we have this very strong verse, Yoga Patahe. By the system of yoga, and specifically Prabhupada says, mystic bodily power to attain the godly stage. There are in the Gita and in the Bhagavatam some fairly extensive descriptions of the system of yoga, the actual activities that need to be performed, the situation that one needs to create for themselves, in terms of, first of all, finding a seat which is not too high, not too low, not too firm, not too soft. Then one has to sit in an equipoised manner, stare at the tip of the nose through half-closed eyes, and meditate. And that is the original meditation of that yogis and even jnanis would do as part of their practice. Now that is obviously one step of the process. And if that process is developed further and developed, you could say, correctly in its intended way, then eventually when the practitioner obtains a certain state of calm and focus, then the attention starts to focus more inwards on the Paramatma Supersoul who is residing in the heart. And this is where the real benefit of these asanas, these yam, niyam, asana, dhyana, pratidhara, etc., where the result of all of these aspects starts to come. If that focus on the Paramatma and the focus on the Lord doesn't actually take place, then that yoga system, that yoga process remains at a very neophyte stage, we can say. It doesn't actually fulfill its purpose of yoga, which is to link. It actually fails to do that. So today the word yoga is used in a very casual sense. People like words which sound mystical today. They take words like spiritual, they take words like mystical. Wow, that's far out. And there's a whole generation of new ages, new age people, who adopt all these different terminologies which they've read about, heard about, and they'll practice different types of yoga, different types of Vedic practices even. Some practice Kundalini as a means of attaining something higher. They meditate on the chakras. But ultimately, these are not just centers of energy which are meant to just give us a little entertainment in this world. Or indeed, as Prabhupada says, to supply us mystic bodily power. Most people who engage in these type of practices desire some sort of power. They want some success. They want some siddhis. They want some special benefits. So therefore they do these activities. And then they have the results that they can control people, that they can become smaller than the smallest, larger than the largest. They can travel anywhere with a mere thought. So who would like some of these siddhis? Okay, one or two devotees. It sounds like they could be quite useful for our preaching sometimes. Imagine, going to a program means you just imagine you're there. And you're there. Well, a few other problems may crop up. Because the chances are if we've spent a lot of time acquiring siddhis, then we may think we can just use those siddhis for our sense gratification. And this is the major problem with sense enjoyment or facility of any kind. Not that the facility is faulty in itself. Of course, everything can be used. Just as Arjuna during the battle of Kurukshetra employed so many weapons, so many ferocious weapons. It wasn't that he just meditated. He actually threw arrows. He fought. And he sent off astras which he had acquired from the heavenly planets during his journey. And he fired them. And they achieved some kind of result. And of course, there is great power there. So when someone has the capability to wield such power, the tendency is that they will misuse it and that they will get preoccupied with the power and the facilities it brings, and they will not focus on actually meditating on the Supreme Lord, who is, as stated in this verse, Mukunda, in the purport, Mukunda. A special person, the giver of liberation. That is what the advanced devotees or those attempting to be advanced focus on. They don't want a more refined state of existence. They don't want to swap their iron shackles of the material world or of the low-grade material world for the golden shackles of the heavenly kingdom, perhaps. This is what most people desire. But they're still shackled. Right from the topmost planet of Lord Brahma down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So devotees never make any attempts to acquire any more powers or siddhis than they actually have. Whatever the Lord desires them to have, that he feels they will need in the pursuit of their service, he will give that to them. And that is Krishna's facility, that a person does not need to endeavor materially in order to progress spiritually. One needs to focus on one's spiritual life, and then Krishna will supply and support. Whatever someone lacks, he will supply it. He will support it. So no need to go down different paths, especially with a material focus. So Mukunda has this name because he awards liberation. And sense satisfaction naturally degrades one. It says here the senses want some engagement. And they have to be engaged in something. We have our eyes, we have our ears, we have our nose, tongue, hands. They all want different objects for their satisfaction. And in the material world, there are whole industries which supply objects just for satisfying each of these senses. For the taste, for the sense of touch, there are nice soft items produced so people can enjoy. Nice items for the tongue, nice sights, nice sounds, nice smells. These days you can buy a smell in a can. It's an aerosol spray, just in case you want it. So the pursuit and the provision of satisfaction, of objects of satisfaction of the senses, is really the subject of this world. There's practically nothing that is done which is not in some way connected to these. The actual requirements of a human being are fairly minimal. Fairly minimal in terms of what one needs for sustenance. But actually the whole industries exist because someone has successfully instilled the idea and actually naturally watered the materialistic propensity of humans to want an additional type of sense gratification. So as Prabhupada says, a dog carries out all these activities, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, very, very happily, without any extra endeavor, just does it naturally. And humans also do the same, but they make elaborate arrangements. They arrange elaborate hotels, elaborate restaurants, elaborate weaponry, nuclear weapons, great systems by which they deliver them. And so, in one sense, humans are no better than the animals. And this is, of course, one of the key principles of Prabhupada's preaching, that when human life is concerned simply with satisfaction of the senses, it is actually as good as animal life and doesn't afford one the opportunity to actually make progress and achieve the real benefit of this human life, which is to achieve liberation. So these yogis, through their different practices, they can also achieve liberation. If we consider the type of yogi who doesn't really meditate extensively in service to the Supreme Lord, simply the process of restricting the senses is actually quite powerful. Just by restricting the senses, by withdrawing the mind from the senses and withdrawing the senses from their sense objects, one can actually become very, very focused. And there obviously is some potency because sages have been doing this for years. For decades, for yugas, this has been a major practice for many sages. And it's not that there was widespread propaganda that forced them to do it. Keep doing this, you'll get results. No, there is some actual direct experience. And in the Gita, it's also said that when one actually controls these different elements, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, they are very solidly controlled through willpower and through practice and meditation, then in one sense, it is said that the super soul is already reached. Now, that's quite an elevated position. That obviously doesn't happen to everyone. But the point is that when one detaches themselves from the material realm, and the material objects no longer create the same type of agitation in the person's desires as they could before, then that person is far better situated to be naturally able to perceive their constitutional makeup, which means they can be that much closer to the super soul, because now there is not this entire barrier of matter and material concepts in between. Of course, actual realization of the super soul of Krishna is another matter altogether, and it is not by practicing a mechanical process that one can actually gain deep realization. But one can certainly be peaceful, situated happily, situated without undue difficulties. This is really the description that is given in the 6th chapter of the Gita on Dhyana Yoga, how to focus one's energies through the process of yoga. But of course, as we know, and as we are made aware here, that eventually sense gratification, unless it is done correctly and unless it is done comprehensively under proper guidance, it essentially remains artificial. Because the nature of the senses is that they want some engagement. And the nature of ourself is that we want some happiness. So if we, through force, check our senses, as we say, check them artificially, if eventually that has a good tendency to fail. Because it is said in the Gita also that one who restrains the senses of action but whose mind dwells on sense objects is simply a pretender. Why? Because if the actual thought process, the inner desire, the inner meditations on continuing to extract pleasure from this world continue, then at some point or other, that fire will reignite again. And even though there's a period of calm, a period of suppression, that hasn't dealt with the issue. So the Bhagavatam's process is something quite different to the standard process described in the rest of the Vedic scriptures. There are so many things that could be said about Srila Vyasadeva's specific purpose, as advised by Narad Muni in this chapter, to compose the Srimad Bhagavatam. But there is a nice conversation that we see in the sixth canto between the Yamadutas, Yamaraj, the Vishnudutas, in connection with the pastime of Ajamil, who is just like Vishwamitra Muni, someone who fell victim at an advanced stage of practice. And yes, he was allured. He ended up doing many, many sinful activities for an extended period of time. And eventually at the end, the Yamadutas came to grab him. But he had had an extensive period of practice of proper austere sadhana before that. And somehow, during this period, he had managed to name his son Narayan. And at this final stage, when he was about to leave, he was simply chanting his son's name, Narayan, Narayan. And these Yamadutas were there. Well, when someone chants the name of Narayan, then great things happen. And when it is done offenselessly, and that is a special quality of Ajamil's chanting, no offense, no ulterior motive, just simply in a helpless condition he was chanting the name Narayan, without even knowing what it meant, really. That wasn't his focus. But still the Vishnudutas came, they protected him. And of course, this whole story is taking place as part of a whole conversation where Parikshit Maharaj is trying to extract from Shukadev Goswami what is the purpose of this repeated cycle of atoning and sinning. People commit sins. And then Shukadev Goswami advises Parikshit Maharaj that the way to deal with this is that before one quits this world, before one leaves this world, one must atone for any sinful activities that they have done. Only in this way do they have a chance to not be completely swept under by the consequences of their actions. But then Parikshit Maharaj gives this point. But actually, yes, we see this happens, but we also see that people never learn. They go through this process. They commit sinful activities. Then they get some relief. They practice some penance. They do something prescribed in the Vedic literatures. And they make some advancement until the next time comes around and they do it again. So he says, it seems to me to be a complete waste of time. Just like an elephant bathes. Manya kunjara shochavat. Just as an elephant has a nice bath in the water, and Prabhupada gave this example. He has a nice bath in the water, makes himself very clean, sprays water everywhere with this jet wash. Precious prayer. You see, that's a natural feature elephants have. They can jet wash themselves. But what does the elephant do after that? He comes out and has a nice roll in the dust on the bank. And once again, he's almost as dirty as he was before. So what is the point of this? What is the point of this elephant-like bathing? That is the process of the process that is encouraged in the Vedic literature. That is encouraged and has been a specific feature of all of Vyasadeva's compositions up to this point. that one is prescribed methods by which they can uplift themselves. But that upliftment is largely material, and it is being done almost at the expense of the practitioner developing an understanding of what pure devotional service is. So there is, as we preach, as we practice devotional service ourselves, we all know that we have to go through different stages of advancement. We don't immediately jump to the stage of samadhi or a very advanced stage straight away. We practice for many years trying to slowly give up our attachments and slowly becoming attached to Krishna. And in that process, there will be so many different adjustments made, so many different types of leniency shown to us by the devotees. The problem comes when we accept that those leniencies, those concessions, they are actually the real process itself. There are adjustments that may be made in order to facilitate us at this particular moment in time. And this was in some sense Vyasadeva's purpose also, that he realized people are totally addicted to sense gratification, but they also need to connect to something spiritual. So he gave them a load of spiritual practices which would, as a side effect, produce the result of some material progress. Now this is could be commonly called bridge preaching. I don't know what we could call it. It could be called progressively bringing one to the stage of Krishna consciousness. And it may be appropriate for certain people in certain stages. It may be appropriate. But as far as the speakers of the Bhagavatam are concerned, for the composer Vyasadeva and for Narad Muni, this type of preaching is, not to mince their words, verily condemned. It's not described in any sort of glorious sense. Vyasadeva is very much criticized for doing this by Narad Muni. And the purpose is that if you mislead people into thinking that their spiritual progress is harmonious or can be, can happen side by side with a process of material progress, that is a type of illusion. It is, in one sense, cheating. You are misleading people on the basis of giving them something spiritual, when actually all that is happening is that you are encouraging them in this process of repeated sinning and atoning. So that is the substantial point that is put to Srila Vyasadeva. And of course he knows that. And this is why then this Bhagavatam is spoken as a natural commentary. Now, what does the Bhagavatam give us that these other literatures don't? Or that this yoga pataya, as it's described, that these yoga processes supply? What can we get from the Bhagavatam that is not possible through these? Well, what we would like ultimately is that we would like those sinful propensities themselves to be totally destroyed. The problem of repeated sinning, repeated atonement, only comes because those propensities for sense enjoyment, which directly leads to sinful activities, that has not been removed. And so the Bhagavatam brings out certain principles that allow those weeds to be destroyed. So in this whole section, in this sixth canto, there's this nice verse, Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayanaha agam dunvanti kartsnena niharam iva bhaskaraha. Just as the sun dissipates the fog by its rays, so similarly, the process of devotional service has the capability of destroying the roots of the weeds of sinful activities, such that they may never return. A complete transformation of consciousness is required. And the acharyas give these examples, graphic examples of bamboo trees and fires. Sometimes there is a fire. You know, bamboo burns like anything. And then it looks like everything is clear, everything is empty. But the problem is that the roots are still there underneath the soil. And as soon as some water comes, some rain comes, as soon as the right conditions are there, next season arrives, they sprout again. and you have a bamboo forest in no time. And that is exactly the process that is condemned, the process of burning the bamboo. That is the process which is not recommended as our focus. If we focus on a process which right from the from our internal workings uproots these weeds, that is a very desirable process. And that will only happen to the extent that we practice the process purely and carefully. The process is very powerful, and as we can imagine, it is spirit that really governs and empowers everything to happen in this world. That is some of our basic philosophy. Nothing happens without the presence of spirit. So you can imagine that when something spiritual is contacted, there may be many, many material effects as well, as a side effect. And to check those becomes our job, actually. To make sure that as we progress through life, we have to somehow deal with all these other side problems that are naturally watered along with this process. This process of watering our creeper of devotion also naturally waters these weeds that also want to grow. And so these weeds can grow, these weeds of different mishras, different types of contaminations, different types of dilutings, different ways to dilute the pure creeper of devotion. So therefore it is, as a natural progression in this purport, this concept of mixed devotional service is mentioned. It is mentioned that pure devotional service is transcendental in nature, and systems of yoga and jnana are subordinate to such a process. When the transcendental devotional service is mixed with a subordinate process, it is no longer transcendental but called mixed devotional service. So there are so many examples of mixed devotional service. Persons who have approached the Lord with some agenda, persons who have approached with a certain desire. Even in the Gita, it's encouraged that four types of persons are considered pious persons when they approach the Lord for some material desire. Artha, artha, arthi, jnani, jignasu. Four types of persons. Yes, they can all come to Krishna, but their motives may not be pure. Only the one who wants realization of the absolute truth is the sort of the closest in that list, or you can say the highest to pure devotional service. But pure devotional service is really jnana karma dhyanavritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti ruttama, completely devoid of these processes of jnana karma yoga. That is the topmost, that is the highest development of bhakti. And to develop that obviously requires some good practice from ourselves. It requires that when these weeds, when these anarthas arise in our heart during the cleaning process, we make a point of rejecting them. We make a point of dealing with them. We make a point of taking advice on how to address them. Suppressing them does not work for any extended period of time. If they remain below and we have some deep-seated attachment to something and it is being exposed through our practice of devotion but not quite completely destroyed due to our inability to practice that devotion to its maximum potency, then we will need to take advice and guidance on dealing with that. And so that is a very important component also. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki. So dealing with this becomes one of the pastimes or constant occupations of a devotee. If they are internalizing their process, they're considering their advancement, they're looking at the repeated weeds which keep arising. Why is it that in this situation and this situation and this situation again, I behaved in exactly the same way? Why does this keep happening? It's obviously not the situation that's to blame. There may be something internal to me that is causing this to happen. And of course, in a wider sense, in our actual practice, why is it repeatedly that I'm unable to grab attention and attraction to the holy name? Why can I not fix my mind on the holy name? Why is anything and everything so much more interesting than just chanting the holy name. This is an example of something that needs some treatment. It needs to be addressed. Otherwise, progress can be very slow. And after all, we are after pure devotion. We'll spend the next month, in a couple of weeks' time, month of Damodar will begin, where the actual glories of pure devotion are exemplified, and we sing about them every day. Just to emphasize that this pure devotion, without any other tinge of anything else, is the most pleasing activity to Krishna. Just for us to really deeply understand that we go through this entire month. So, this process of spiritual life includes many aspects, and the yoga process can be a part of that. But if just the yoga process itself starts to be portrayed or to be seen as sufficient in itself, then that is not the conclusion accepted by advanced devotees. The conclusion of the advanced devotees is that service to Mukunda is the actual process that brings about one's liberation and salvation. Liberation through this yoga process, through our own austerities, may bring us to a Brahma-Bhuta stage even. It may do that. But because there is satisfaction, the senses require satisfaction and that is not provided, and our minds may still be desiring some sort of sense enjoyment, then there is every chance of fall down. So it's not something that's recommended. So I'll stop there. There's quite a few points there. Maybe devotees have any points, questions?